cold and the sun is going to shine today. Welcome to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. We are now going from 8 to 10 o'clock, so we're going to have a lot of information on our shows every Sunday morning. Definitely worth tuning in. Before we get into that any further, I want to talk a little bit about our sponsors of We the People. This morning I would like to thank North State Consultants, Mark Kent, and his wife Linda and his sister Linda provide fabulous tax information and services, especially this time of year. You want to really give those folks a call. Their telephone number is 221-0101. And, you know, they do a few other things over there, too. They have a notary service. They do some vacation traveling planning for you. So, you know, they're pretty well-rounded. Primary business is the tax business, so definitely give them a call. We also want to thank All Temp Tactical Lube. Now, this is kind of an interesting thing. If you haven't heard Jim and Nancy Myatt on the radio recently, they basically developed a product that they specifically had in mind for our soldiers in combat overseas, and it is a product that cleans their weaponry, cleans it really well. It's probably better than anything else on the market. Those that have used it, Aaron, you've used it, just sing praises. And
it goes from really super cold weather to really super hot weather, which is what they deal with over there. And it lubes things from the inside out. So instead of when you clean something metal that has a lube on it and it's just back to bare metal, this never comes out of the pores of the metal. So let's just say you're not a firearms mm-hmm. enthusiast, but you have locks at your house.
Yeah,
you have
good
locks,
for a lot of things.
You have locks that stick and are a pain, and you're squirting WD-40 and junk like that. This stuff will fix it. It's 500 applications
It when goes a long time.
Well, when you pull the brush out, I did this for somebody the other day. You pull the brush out of the bottle, and it looks like this gray, like, ooze, you know? And it doesn't even move. So the lady said, well, I think that's old. I think it's...
Stuck. It's stuck.
I don't think that's even, you know, real. And I moved the brush around. No, it's totally flexible, but doesn't drip.
And they've got a special going right now. You know, one of the bottles with 500 applications is $39.95. And if you buy one, they will send two bottles overseas to soldiers. So it's buy one, get 2 cents overseas, which is a pretty cool deal.
No, they send all three overseas. If you're buying one,
so you don't buy one for yourself.
No, if you're sending one overseas to a service person, they'll send three. You pay
nice.
For one.
Can't beat that.
Very cool.
And they've got a telephone number if you want to give them a call and find out more about that. It's 800-301-0046. And definitely give those folks a call. You want to check this out. I also want to thank our friend Damsel, who is a great supporter of the Reading Tea Party and We the People radio program. And if you do want to tune in, if you want to give us a call or you want to chat or you want to hear the show stream live, go to readingteaparty.com. At the top of the page, you'll see a little icon that says radio. Click on that, and it's super easy to tune into the show this morning. Or listen later. We've got archives available for all of our shows.
I would also recommend that you keep checking back because the show archives, obviously, and you can send that link to anybody. But we're working on getting a smaller file that you'll be able to email. Right now it's an MP3 file format, and it's too big to email. So we're working on that and also getting them on CD for the people who are outside our listening range and maybe are not computer users and you'd like to get this information to them on different weeks, different programs. So we're going to make that available too, so be sure to check that.
And for those of you that don't know, the three core principles behind the Reading Tea Party and behind the We the People talk show are adherence to the Constitution, limited government, and fiscal responsibility. So we do tailor all of our programs around those three core principles. This is very much an educational show. I mean, Aaron and I chime in once in a while, but we primarily want to hear from the experts that have anything to add to those three core principles and how it will affect your life today and in the future for your kids and grandkids. So it's kind of important to know.
Exactly. So we're going to take a short break here, and when we come back, we have two guests in the studio and we have one on the phone. It's going to be awesome. So get your coffee and get prepared to listen.
You can say...
Welcome back to We the People. You are listening to us on KCNR. I hope you will go to ReadingTeaParty.com, click on Radio Show, and double-check the archives and all that other good information. You can also access the chat from there. So while our guest is speaking, you could be writing in questions. You can also call us at 530-605-4567 anytime during the program. And just make a mental note that this is something that everybody really needs to know. You can always send people to the archives, and they can listen later on these programs, but we've got information that everybody who has a county and a county supervisor should know. So let's bring everybody in. How should we do this in order? So we just talked about the county. So Les Baugh is a county supervisor for Shasta County.
District 5.
Good morning.
Say hi to the people, Les.
Good morning. Hi to the people.
Thank you for being here. You know, Les is a pastor on Sunday mornings, and he was fortunate enough to find a backup so that he could be here with us.
I will thank David Honey for taking
thank you, David
my
Honey.
Place.
Because technically we're not at church.
We're not at church.
No,
but we are
going to
be.
We are.
But we are preaching to the masses
there
this
you
morning.
Go. Let's preach it.
And we are praying for solutions.
So really, it all fits in.
So on that note, we also have Sylvia Milligan from Recreation Outdoor Coalition,
otherwise known as ROC.
ROC, yeah, ROC, and the Friends of Shasta Trinity National Forest is the other organization. Got that one right.
Yeah.
Say hi to the people, Sylvia.
Good morning. Good Sunday morning to all of you.
Because we're looking at each other, but the people out there are going, now, which one's which?
Yeah.
Obviously, Les is the
boy.
Yeah, I'm
the guy.
He's the guy, you know,
thanks.
So that's easy. All right. So our whole point today is the topic of coordination. And most of us, you know, the last time we dealt with coordination, that was in PE, and we were, you know, trying to hop over some hurdles or something like that. So when you talk coordination, people look at you and they're like, you know, what? But it's actually a legal strategy. True?
Absolutely.
All right. Who wants to explain this while we're waiting for the expert to call us on the phone and give us the legal beagle end of it?
Oh, boy. Trying to measure up to Fred Kelly Grant is not going to be
easy.
Well,
hurry. He hasn't called yet. You can shine now.
Coordination is the process whereby all government agencies have to coordinate with each other when they prepare a project or something going on. And I can give you the example with the Forest Service. When the Forest Service does a project, before it goes out to public process, they are supposed to contact all other agencies and show them what they have going and mitigate any concerns before it goes out to the public. This is a process that is written up in the NEPA plan.
So now, what is NEPA?
Yeah.
NEPA is the National Environmental Policy Act.
We have to always de-acronym everything because, you know, lots of us live out there in the world. And just yesterday I spent the day with the California Cattlemen's Association at one of their annual meeting in the morning and their banquet at night. And I looked around the room and I thought, classic, a bunch of people who really just wanted to go do, you know, live their life and do their job. And here they were talking about all this you know, environmental policy and all the things that are affecting them, and on also the issue of taxation. You know, if somebody passes away, and how many people have lost their ranches because of the taxes they had to pay. And I'm thinking,
and that's a shame because you're supposed to be able to pass that stuff on down through the generations.
Yeah, they were really cool about it, but here are a bunch of people who didn't want to become politicians or tax accountants. And
wouldn't you say that's all of us?
I know. I was going to say it's everybody, but it was just frustrating. I got to meet the beef princess, though. That was fun. That's a whole new world. I have like three sheep. You know, that's my agricultural, you know, foray. But
and we have Mr. Fred Kelly Grant on the line. Good morning, Mr. Grant.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us.
I demonstrated again this morning how electronically challenged I am.
Yes, but you're the legal beagle of legal beagles, so you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, that's right. We can always find somebody to do the techno stuff for you.
Well, it's almost necessary. My grandchildren have to play videos for me.
That's what they're for.
I'm from a different era, I guess.
Aren't you just trying to make them feel helpful? Okay.
Good to be with you this morning.
Well, it's good to have you here, too. We have lots of people who want to hear from you. You're a man very much in demand, and we thought we would save you some travel time.
Yeah.
and let you call us.
Well, that's good. Unless it's warm there, and if it is, then
it's
wish I were there.
No, we solved that. We've got a little fog going on and stuff, but it's not an Arctic Arctic winter.
Yeah,
but
and it's interesting. In the era of global warming, we have a very, very cold winter.
Yeah. Well, and I saw this morning in Atlanta in the south, the entire citrus crop and virtually all the crops in the south are in danger today, but I guess that is indicative of the global warming trend that we have.
Yeah. Nice, huh?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm looking at your bio. For the folks that are watching this program online, they can read that. But rather than read this whole thing, why don't you tell us the interesting things that people would like to know about what makes your information, I guess, I don't know if relevant's the right word, but...
Critical?
Yeah, give them some history on yourself, because you're an interesting guy.
Well, I've lived some interesting days. Let's put it that way. Very recently I was able to have a reunion in Baltimore with some of the people that I worked with when I was chief of the organized crime back there organization, and we had a great time reminiscing, and we all decided that really the highlight of our career was in those days together in the state's attorney's office in Baltimore. Which was kind of nice, but also kind of tragic to think that the highlight of our career was 40 years ago. at any rate, I graduated from the university. I went to school in Idaho, born in South Carolina, so I still consider myself a Southerner, really. I spent all my summers down there. I went to the University of Chicago Law School, and from there to Baltimore, where I clerked for Judge Brune of the Court of Appeals of Maryland, and then I was an assistant United States attorney, and then chief of the Organized Crime Division in the State's Attorney's Office of Baltimore, then a criminal defense attorney, and then my wife persuaded me to come home to Idaho so that our boys could start to school here, and I was counsel to two governors, Governor Andrews and Governor Evans, both very, very conservative Democrats. Then after that, I did various legal things in capital punishment cases for the public defender. And then 18 years ago, a friend of mine asked me to help the ranchers in Owyhee County in Idaho. It's a huge, huge 5-million-acre county with less than 10,000 people population. About 180 family ranchers are the economic backbone of the county. And this county was picked by the president, President Clinton, and his state BLM director, and Bruce Babbitt, the Secretary of Interior, to begin the removal of cows from the public lands. The image on television ads and on bumper stickers was cattle free by 93, and Owyhee County was picked as the first. They asked me to come out and see if I could help them, and I took a look at the federal statutes, and I found a little coordination clause, and I told the ranchers, I could probably help them. And my estimate was maybe for 2 years, and they better start looking for something else to do. Because when the federal government decides to take you out, they're going to take you out. Well, I'm glad to say that 18 years later, all those ranchers are still in business. Some of them have regained grazing privileges and rights that they had lost. They're all still operating at a profit, even though some of them at a very slim profit. And from that, coordination with Owyhee County began. It was the only county in the nation using that clause in the federal statutes. Modoc County in California came quickly behind Owyhee, and I helped those folks there put into place a coordination process. And then for 15 or 16 years, those were the only two counties in the country that were using the process. It's a process that brings the federal agencies to the table, and they have to seek consistency between their policy and local government policy.
And that consistency, that word consistency, is pretty paramount in the
yes,
whole coordination effort. You know, I was reading up on it last night, and that is one of the two critical factors in a coordination
Absolutely.
Agreement, is they have to maintain consistency with local government.
Absolutely. Without that, you have nothing more than just the usual public input and public comment, which they're not required to really pay much attention to it. The only requirement, when you go to a public meeting and you voice your position on an issue, about the only requirement they have is to write something in their plan that shows that you commented. But when you use, when local government uses the coordination process, they're required to try to make their policy consistent with the local policy, and if they can't, they're required to say why they can't. And the reason given by the statute for can't is, would it violate some federal law to make your policy consistent? That's very difficult for them to show, because the federal laws basically all have that provision in them, that there should be consistency between local government and the federal government.
So if local government doesn't have any type of a plan in place, they basically get steamrolled.
Well, that's right, and that happens all over the country, particularly in the West. And one of the things about a plan, one thing that, that scares a lot of local government away from this process is that word plan. They think they've seen so many BLM plans and Forest Service plans that run to 1,000 pages or more that they think that's required, and it isn't. The word is plan, policy, or management action. If they don't have a formally approved plan, the federal obligation is to make whatever the federal government's doing consistent with a local policy. For example, in Logan County in Kansas, where the, and it's a long story, but Fish and Wildlife threatened the farming community in that county by bringing into the county the black-footed ferret, which is an endangered species. Well, for that county, we developed a policy two paragraphs long that was opposed to bringing non-indigenous species into the county. And on the basis of that two-paragraph policy, we required Fish and Wildlife to come to the table. And as a result of that, instead of driving the farmers out of business, we've maintained a stable relationship between Fish and Wildlife and the farmers in that county.
And just to back up a little bit to the very first point you made, which was that it was going to be cattle-free by 93, for all the people that are still scratching their head thinking, why? You know, what was the whole point of doing that?
Well, the theory was that the, and I'm going to, you know, I 10 years ago, I probably wouldn't have said some of the things I'm going to say, because I really believe that only conspiratorialists talked about these things, because I hadn't spent enough time studying them. The announced theory was that cattle grazing was decimating the public lands, and that ranchers were really welfare recipients because they weren't paying enough in grazing fees to graze the lands. Now, that announced theory, which a lot of the country really didn't know the adverse part to, you know, and outside the West, people don't understand grazing. People think that a rancher in Idaho or in Northern California who may have access to hundreds of thousands of federal acres, they think that's part of their ranch. They think that Western ranchers are rich. And so to them, it made sense. In fact, it doesn't make sense, because we know that grazing is a good management tool for the federal lands, and that if you didn't have grazing, and where grazing has been restricted by federal judges, we have terrible wildfires. But that was the announced theory. My theory is that it was the beginning, it was the implementation of a philosophy that's been in place for many years, that we have, that the government has to control, has to gain absolute control over all the federal lands. As long as ranchers exercised what they consider to be grazing rights, and what even the law recognizes as a grazing privilege where due process is involved, they can't just take control of the federal lands. They have to deal with the ranchers. And I truly believe that this was the first implementation of the effort to maintain absolute control over the federal lands. I think that right now, the travel management plans are one further step in trying to take away the recreational use that Ms. Milligan, and I think I heard her earlier on the show, that her groups exercise their right to use the forest lands. It's the effort of the government to take complete control, shut the people out of these federal lands so that they have them as absolute collateral for our debt to China.
And, you know, before we take a break, when we come back, I would like to hear from Les, our Shasta County Supervisor from District 5. I'd be interested in hearing about your efforts, and when we come back from our break, on at the county level, on what you've done as a Board of Supervisors to try to develop coordination with the Forest Service. And Mike Adams is online, too, waiting. And
We're going to have a big discussion, so
yeah.
So Mr. Grant, grab some coffee.
Okay, good.
All righty, we're going to take a couple-minute break here so everybody else can grab some coffee and get what they need. I'd get a pencil and paper if I were you, but that's just me. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
Just show up. This is the show that's sponsored by Lazy K Ranch, Affairs, Weddings by Gwen, JBL Ranch and Selmo Vineyards, Music by Robert, Hannah and Company, and endorsed by the Shasta County Professional Wedding Association. Hey, I'll see you there January 23rd. Senior Citizens Hall from 11 to 3 p.m.
See you there.
Hi, this is Dr. Doug Craig, and I have a new show on KCNR every Sunday at 10 a.m. called Wake Up Call. In my Reading psychology practice for the last 22 years, I have learned a few things about how we can heal ourselves, our relationships, and our families. I hope you'll join me as we move beyond politics with a psychology of hope and understanding. Instead of focusing on our differences, let's celebrate our common truths every Sunday at 10 a.m. on KCNR 1460.
AutoZone. Want to make your tax refund go farther? Head to AutoZone.
Get in the zone. AutoZone.
Why not use your tax refund to protect one of your greatest investments, your car? It's a great chance to do that project you've been putting off.
Good morning. Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. I just love that music after our first break. I mean, by this time, I'm awake and I'm kind of ready to dance. If you're just tuning in...
We're in a small room with five people. Just feel our pain, will you?
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, you've tuned into We the People at KCNR, home of Free Fire Media. We are talking about the coordination process with Mr. Fred Kelly Grant, Les Baugh, our Shasta County Supervisor, District 5, and Sylvia Milligan of ROC, Recreation Outdoor Coalition. And a real quick shout-out to our sponsors, our friend Damsel, North State Consultants, and All Temp Tactical Lube.
And we're going to force them to make commercials so you can hear them in the break.
I think we're going to bring Mike Adams on. He's a caller with some insight and information, and he's got a question.
Mike's
Good morning,
up,
Mike.
And Mike's up there in Siskiyou County, and you might recognize his voice because he was on our program last week about the monument. Mike works with the organization CARE.
My question is for Mr. Grant, and I guess it's a side point that coordination is a government to government process. What can we, the people, do? For instance, our county supervisors have decided not to coordinate, or they have coordinated incorrectly. What can we do beside our county council? What can we do to coordinate with the government?
Fred, are you out there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, there you go.
I could barely hear the question, but let me see if I got it right. The point that he made is that coordination is a government-to-government process, and it is. And the question is, if the county is not coordinating, what can the people do to reach that level of communication with the federal government? Is that right?
That's
basically
correct.
The question.
Yep, that's correct.
Okay. First of all, I think there are places where counties do not coordinate. It's my understanding that Siskiyou County does have in place a coordination process, but the question is a very good question, because there are places where counties just don't want to get involved for one reason or another. We have some places in the country where natural resource conservation districts have taken on the coordination role where the counties wouldn't. In Arizona right now, we have a couple of districts like that which have been very successful with our help to resist the listing of the desert tortoise as an endangered species. We have one state where an irrigation district has engaged in coordination. But let's take the question of where you can't find any local government organization that will undertake the process. The public input process that is provided by federal law, as I said, doesn't have the same catch that coordination does from consistency. But I believe, and I'm doing some work with Sylvia Milligan and others in California right now, and also down in Southern California, with putting together a coalition of organizations of people to act as a group as opposed to individual members of the public. And my belief is that there are regulations regarding the public input process that if we can find groups and organizations that will form a coalition to act on the same page, we can accomplish almost the same as coordination. It's going to take harder work, and it's going to take real commitment on the part of people to work together. But that's my belief. That I've expressed that belief several times over the last 2 weeks because people are anxious to do something, and when they can't get local government to move to do it, we've got to find a way that the public can do it, and I believe I've found that, but it's going to take real close work between organizations of people, such as in your area, the Coalition of Organizations of Motorized Vehicle Users and Recreation Users. We can do that. We can find that water users, land users, recreation users, all of the people who make multiple use of the lands can form a coalition, and I believe I can show them how we can make the public input process work. Almost as well as the coordination process.
And, you know, Mr. Grant, I think on so many levels with all of the issues regarding land and private property, it is going to take bringing all kinds of groups together, despite the fact that they may have different needs and issues, bringing them all together and forming a coalition. I mean, that's so critical on so many levels.
That's exactly right. You know, a long time ago, if the loggers had joined with the cattlemen, with the recreation users, and formed that coalition, we would be in much better place.
Absolutely.
They didn't do that. They didn't do that, but we can do it now.
Now, I'd like to kind of turn over the conversation a little bit to Les Baugh, our county supervisor. And Les, you actually have been a part of a county that did choose to come up with a management plan and initiate coordination with the Forest Service. Can you give us some history on that?
Absolutely, and I'll start with a thank you, an acknowledgement to Fred Kelly Grant.
Absolutely.
Sylvia Milligan, through Recreation Outdoor Coalition, brought Mr. Grant to Shasta County, myself on the board, and David Kehoe, along with, I think, 14 local government agencies and a lot of people, sat in on Mr. Grant's presentation about coordination. And you hit a home run there, Fred. We really appreciate you here in Shasta County.
Oh, after and his you've done great work.
Oh, well, thank you. We believe, just as Mr. Grant put it, that the federal government has usurped local government authority and control with the desire to control absolutely everything. I think you hit it spot on. In Shasta County, we have declared our right and our intention to coordinate, and we have expressed that desire, and we have served the Forest Service locally with that intention, and what we have received in return is we have been stood up, basically.
But aren't it, now, by law, are they not required?
By law, by their own mandates, they are required. And
yet they're not.
And they're not. And that's why you see and have heard locally on the media that Shasta County has declared its intention to seek legal means. If nothing else could be done, we'd rather simply just settle the issue. But if nothing else can be done, the board unanimously has moved forward and is exploring every option, including legal means.
So the coordination process actually can work for you or against you
And if I'm correct in my understanding that the Forest Service mandated this coordination process, probably so that they could close roads. And in fact, we are, as a county, taking that coordination process and using it the other direction to keep the roads open. Am I correct in that assumption?
You know, it's bigger than just, I think you're right, but it's bigger than just the roads. Mm-hmm. The coordination issue, it is about, as the caller mentioned, a government-to-government relationship. We are representing, at the Shasta County Board of Supervisors, the people. We the people of Shasta County. And we believe that the people would like to use the resource that we the people own. And not just for travel management purposes, for OHVs, but for camping, fishing, hunting, hiking. And Mr. Grant, you said something that that really hit home when you talk about absolute control. I recently attended the Regional Council of Rural Counties meeting. I'm an executive member of that board. And Mr. Randy Moore, our regional forester, was present. And he left with us the letter of intent for Regional 5. And there were two issues that he declared to be of the utmost importance in order to fix the problems of Region 5. One was climate change, and the second one was, guess what? Humans.
if we could just get
rid of humans in the forest, everything would be better with Region 5. And
that's
it says
exactly
it right in writing. I've been saying that the Forest Service intention was to eliminate the existence of a human imprint locally. And there it was in writing. Two main problems, climate change and humans.
Unbelievable.
Right.
And we own those forests.
Well, I thought we did.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, Mr. Grant, I have a question for you. When you figured out that all this was possible through coordination and you started working with that group of ranchers, was all this climate change and all this stuff, was this all part of it, or were they just kind of land-grabbing back then?
No, it's been part of it for years. If you trace back the climate change philosophy, you'll trace it back to some money people, big money people, who 30 to 40 years ago were promoting world government. This is where a decade ago I wouldn't have talked like this. I thought
we wouldn't either. You're in good company.
Yeah.
Yeah. We thought they were conspiratorialists. But when you trace it back, all of this came about as a result of their determination, meaning the people in this world, the International Monetary Fund and all other kinds of groups who favor world government. Their writings demonstrated that Americans formed the real threat to world government because of their paranoia about private property rights. And about the use of their lands, and something had to be done about it. And you trace the climate control theories back, and that's where they originated. This is just a tool in their control people. It's a tool in their toolbox to get humans out. There are many others. Right now in the Congress, there is a Wildlands Corridors Bill that is pending. Where it would set wildland corridors from Canada to Central America throughout the United States with the purpose of limiting and eliminating human occupations and human residences in those corridors. Smart growth zoning, all of these things are oriented toward forcing human beings to large metropolitan areas and out of rural America. That's where my next book is, War on Rural America, and it traces these things. Our traditions in the West and in the South, in all rural areas, are under attack because we form the threat to the kinds of agreements that even back in the Bush administration he was putting together between Canada and Mexico and the United States. All of these things work toward the same thing, and that's what Les just referred to, getting human beings off of the public lands, out of the public lands, so that the government has complete control of them.
Now, we've got a caller on line two. Ron, good morning. You have a question.
What's that?
Good morning, Ron. You have a question.
Yes, I do.
And who's your question for, Ron?
I'm going to step outside. I listen to the radio and you both.
Oh,
That's always problematic. With that 7-second delay, you're like, whoa, what am I doing?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do have a question. Do I ask you or do I ask him?
Whoever your question is for, you can talk directly to Mr. Grant if you'd like.
Okay, sure.
Go ahead and ask your question, Ron.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize I was on the air.
Yeah, you are
on the air. Everybody's listening to you, Ron.
Okay. My question is, the Forest Service is already destroying roads as we speak. I've heard about some on the coast and also up here in Ready. Excuse me. Is there any way that we can form or have a court order make them stop doing it until we can solve this problem? And that's my question. I'll take my answer on the air. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ron. And anybody that wants to chime into that, feel free.
Well, yes, there is. This is what, for example, just recently in California, the state of California sued the Forest Service because they had refused to coordinate with the state over the roadless area designations in California. And they won. The Federal District Court for the Northern District of California said that the Forest Service had refused to coordinate, and therefore they set aside their plan. And they sent that plan back to the Forest Service. The Forest Service finally agreed that they wouldn't appeal the decision. They would live with it, and they would go back to the table to redo their plan with the state. Now, the problem is that in that particular area, the state wants more roads closed than the Forest Service was even willing to do. But it demonstrates that there is enforceability in the courts of the coordination mandate that would force them to deal with local government as well as with the state, and then you get down to the issue of roads being open or closed. Now, in order to try to avoid litigation in California, in Arizona, in Wyoming, and a lot of other states, I met with the chief of the Forest Service in Boise several months ago, Tom Tidwell. I talked with him about coordination. And then on December 3rd, I met with his two top planners in the Forest Service. And I spent over an hour with them discussing coordination. I filed a brief with them relating to the cases and the laws and the regulations that require coordination. And they asked me then, once they had a chance to review all that, to make an appointment with Randy Moore, the regional supervisor. My executive assistant is trying very hard to get that meeting arranged. And I hope that it gets arranged real quickly because, as I explained to the chief, if we don't get this resolved through coordination efforts outside of court, we're going to court. And there will be maybe 40 to 50 counties and towns that join in that lawsuit.
Okay. So, Les, what's your take on what Ron's question was regarding the local issues?
Well, I was hoping that Ron would stay on the line. If not, I'll give him a number for the county, 225-5557. Ron, if you could furnish Shasta County, myself specifically, with any roads that have been closed that are the maintenance level 3 roads that have been destroyed or 2, I would like to have those. I'd like to have the specific locations. I'll go out on site and take a look at it. We'll send a team out there. We believe the Forest Service needs to coordinate with us first and foremost. I think that we could, if we could actually come to the table, if they would show up for a meeting, we could come to a solution that would be good for everybody in Shasta County.
Okay. So is the implication that the Forest Service may be closing these roads without notification to anybody? Is that what you see happening?
If that's the case, if Ron's information can be verified, okay, that would mean that they have moved on beyond us and have declared no intention to work with us.
Okay, okay.
Yes,
that's exactly
I see it as a threat.
Yeah, definitely.
Exactly right.
Mr. Grant, with stuff like that, you know, where they're closing the roads and they're not telling people, I do know, I mean, something we can verify here in Shasta County anyway is that Sharon Haywood, the supervisor of the Shasta Trinity National Forest, has been asked or, you know, requested to come to Shasta County Board of Supervisors meetings so that they can work on these things, and she basically refuses. Can they just refuse forever?
No, that's she's one of the specific examples that I used with the chief of the Forest Service. As being a supervisor, a forest supervisor who just refused to follow the law. And the law is not oblique. I mean, it's not anything that's hard to understand. It's in their statute. It's in their own regulations. When she refuses to meet and coordinate with Shasta County, she is violating Forest Service regulations as well as federal statutes. And those statutes go back to 1972, and I know that it's way too long a subject to go into on your show, but that was the time when the federal government decided that it would keep all the public grazing lands. Until then, the federal government had had the concept that they were going to sell those lands. And at that point, they decided that the federal government was going to keep them. There was a big debate as to whether they should be put under the Forest Service or whether they should create a new agency. The debate was won by the new agency. They created the Bureau of Land Management. And in that statute, Senator Packwood of Oregon put the coordination language. The BLM and the Forest Service fought it. They went to Congress. They testified that this would make their job much more difficult. And the members of the committee said that's what it's intended to do, because local government, the economy of local government is important to all these counties in the West, and you are going to have to cooperate with them. So this is not a mystery to them. They know what the law is. They're just refusing to follow it.
Nice. We do have until 10 o'clock, so we do have plenty of time to explore some things if you'd like to go into them. We won't take a commercial till 9 o'clock. But we do have Nate on line 2 who has a question for you. He actually hosts a program called Sovereign Minds that's on this same station at 8 o'clock on Sunday nights. And they explore the things that, you know, that we all thought were crazy and conspiratorial, but now are normal.
And that's right. Yeah, common fact. Good morning, Nate.
Hello, Aaron. Hello, everybody. This question is for Fred.
Yes.
Is that his name? Fred Grant? You're talking about the corridor shutdowns from Canada to South America?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Who's going to be seeing that over? Is that the U.S. government or is that the U.N.?
No, this is a bill that's in the Congress of the United States. It was one of the things that we were afraid was going to get pushed through in the lame duck session when Senator Reid was abandoning the rules and changing the numbers of bills and substituting bills for others. And it was one that we were watching very carefully, because it is in the it all relates to the United Nations habitat areas and habitat zones, but it is in the United States Congress.
So,
along with the Clean
Water
Restoration Act, which under the terms of that act, the Corps of Engineers will be given permit control, over the use of all water in the United States, whether it's intrastate, interstate, whether it's navigable or not, and the damage to be done by that act is worse when you look at the technical amendments that occur in it that amend the Federal Pollution Act, to the point where the Corps of Engineers would also have control over every piece of land that adjoins, is near, is affected by, or affects water. So the Corps of Engineers basically
of
by that statute
and
would
that
be given...
what this is dealing with?
Say that again, Nate.
Have you heard of Agenda 21? And
oh,
is
yes.
that what this is about?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, yeah,
yeah,
so
that's exactly what it's about.
Because it doesn't seem like America has jurisdiction in South America, you know.
Well, the corridor bill would only affect the United States, but the corridors would run from the Canadian border to our borders with Mexico, and it would connect with Central America.
So that has to do with NAFTA too, probably, huh?
It does indeed. The NAFTA superhighway was part of that. The whole Texas interstate corridor was part of that.
Well, all right. Well, thank you for your time, and I enjoy listening to the show.
Hey, we like yours too, Nate. Thank you.
All right, great. Thank you.
So, Fred, now that we've brought out the horrible Agenda 21 thing, can I hate to put this on you, but can you give people a synopsis of that craziness?
There are a lot of different concepts that are all joined into it. One is smart growth. The folks on the other side, the control side, have been very, very intelligent through the years in picking terms that mislead the public into thinking that that what they're doing really does make sense. Smart growth. What an amazing term for a type of zoning and planning that will restrict the use of private property to the point where the owner of property will not be able to divide it. For example, a farmer who owns 160 acres and has four kids and has decided throughout his life that he would divide that property into four 40-acre, let's make it a little less, 140 acres. He would divide it into four parcels under 40 acres, one for each of his kids. He's not going to be able to do that. Agenda 21 combines smart growth with climate control, with land control, and with planning control. For example, if you have a lake in your county, there are lake shore regulations that these folks try to make you believe are designed for your local lake. I can go on the internet and show you that there are regulations proposed for lakes in Arizona that are exactly the same, word for word, as regulations that are designed for application to lakes in Wisconsin. Agenda 21 is simply a movement to take control of land.
And all these things, we've talked a lot about public land and federal land and all that, but it completely ties in to private property.
Because if anybody owns a private parcel adjacent to any of the public land, they are subject to exactly the same restrictions on their own private property as they are to the adjacent public land. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. The United States Supreme Court has said that the United States government has absolute power to protect its property. And that means it can do whatever it wants to private property that is adjacent to the public lands under the guise of protecting the public lands. But make no mistake about it, these corridor bills are not just aimed at public lands. And the Clean Water Act is not just aimed at public lands. It's aimed at all land that connects to any body of water in the United States.
And so you have I always try to think of it kind of like a pyramid, because it's hard to understand all this sometimes for folks, and they start to see these things as independent problems when in fact they are literally like a pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of your base of the pyramid would be the Agenda 21, and then I know there are all sorts of little pieces, but I guess the next thing that I see most often is the ICLEI, the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives.
Absolutely.
And they wind up being almost like a delivery system for all the, when you said the cookie cutter provisions about lakes and this and that, and how magically they're all the same.
That's exactly right, yeah. That's right.
Those go through the ICLEI that then move to, like, in California, the Strategic Growth Council. I mean, they've ruined words like strategic and smart and...
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, you look at go back a ways to the Coastal Commission, the California Coastal Commission.
There you go.
Which took control of land and put it outside the hands of elected officials, put it outside the hands of private landowners, to the point where if you are in the zone that the Coastal Commission has authority over and jurisdiction over, you can't do anything with your private land without a permit. And the courts have ruled in a constitutional challenge that is constitutional, that the state had the right to establish that non-elected commission to control land. If you recall, there's a regional planning council of some type, and I don't remember the name of it, between California and Nevada that controls Lake Tahoe. And just a few years ago, there's a couple from California who owned a lot on Lake Tahoe. They had they bought it many, many years ago so that they could retire there, build a cabin there. And they found that they not only could not build a cabin there, they couldn't even camp there. because of the rules of that commission, and that went to the United States Supreme Court. We had high hopes that the court would say that that was a taking of property in violation of the Fifth Amendment without payment, and the court ruled that it wasn't, that it was not. They said that that if, in fact, the takings laws were applied to that specific control of property, it would put a chilling effect on local land use planning. Well, we all thought, meaning those people who were proposing that that was a taking, we thought the Fifth Amendment was supposed to put that chilling effect.
And, you know, to put it in real financial terms for people that might be listening, that makes that piece of property worthless, basically, because nobody's going to buy it, and they certainly can't sell it.
Exactly right. They can't use it, and they can't sell it. And the court faced that argument by saying, well, it's a piece of land, and land has intrinsic value. Which is just ridiculous.
And, you know, in terms of some of the amendments in the Constitution, Mr. Grant, when we come back from our break, I'd like to talk a little bit about the 10th Amendment. You had mentioned that to me when I called you earlier in the week, and you wanted to tie that into the coordination process and the power grab from the federal government. Maybe we can speak to Sylvia a little later and find out what her coalition is doing these days and what kind of a break they're making in this battle.
Exactly. So we're gonna catch some information here coming from the big world. It's 9 o'clock here at KCNR 1460 AM. We'll be back on the home of Free Fire Media with Mr. Fred Kelly Grant and our other guests.
The People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. Hey, I do want to say, if you're just tuning in and you thought this might be another show, well, We the People expanded to 2 hours a couple of weeks ago. So we are now 8 to 10, a radio talk show about the principles of fiscal responsibility, limited government, and adherence to the Constitution. If you want to give us a call, we're at 605-4567. If you want to chat or stream live, go to readingteaparty.com, look for the radio icon at the top of the page, click on that, and you can tune in. And I want to give a quick shout-out to our sponsors, our very good friend Damsel, who is a great supporter of the Reading Tea Party and We the People. North State Consultants, if you need your taxes done, they're the people to call. And All Temp Tactical Lube. And again, that information can be found on the radio link at readingteaparty.com.
Absolutely. And North State Consultants does more than your taxes, actually. Mm-hmm. They help you keep your money. Their goal in life is to not have you pay any more than you actually technically absolutely owe. That's what I look for in a tax preparer. So, Mr. Grant, before we move into some of these other topics, you had mentioned something that we've been hitting really hard here in the Reading Tea Party meetings of late, that it's become very, very clear that we spend a whole lot of time sweating about elections and who wins and who loses. And, you know, we take a lot of robocalls. We walk a lot of precincts. I mean, the world is focused on elections. And then when you have a massive government land grab, our elected officials have no control.
That's right. That's why the movement in coordination, the movement in implementing the 10th Amendment is so important. If I could say just a few words about the Tea Party,
you can say whatever you want.
This morning, Senator Reid on Meet the Press told David Gregory that the Tea Party was born out of the economic distress, and as soon as the economy improved, the Tea Party would disappear. You know, that's one of the problems that people run into when they label something. I have continually said that the Tea Party is a name that people can conveniently put on an organization, but this is really a movement of Americans.
Absolutely.
It's a movement of Americans that don't have to be angry. We're not all angry the way the liberals try to characterize us. We are in favor of government limited by the Constitution.
Sure.
And there are some angry people who represent our view, but there are angry people on the other side too. Anger doesn't get us anywhere. That's why I was so fortunate to find the coordination process. We don't have to be angry to make these people come to the table and do the right thing. We're doing it with logic and strategy. And all of the Tea Party groups that I met when I was there, oh, I don't know, Sylvia and Les can tell you, a few months ago, they weren't angry people. They're people insisting that the 10th Amendment be applied. They're insisting that local government resume its rightful place as the most important level of government in this country. That historically has been true. In the revolutionary times, the state governments were not the critical elements of government. Towns were, cities were, counties were only designed because it you had to have one place. It was more convenient to have one place where people could go and do their legal business. The cities and towns were the important levels of government. That's what we've got to return to. And that's what I think the Tea Party movement is about.
And you know,
it's about bringing control and power back to local government, where you can walk in off the street and talk to your elected officials, where you don't have to go through all of the protocols and so on to deal with Congress, and your voice is heard because your congressman is not one, your commissioner is not one of 454, he's one of three or one of five.
And Mr. Grant, I want to, you know, for those that are listening that actually do not know what the 10th Amendment is, I'd like to read a description of that amendment.
Okay.
The 10th Amendment to the United States Constitution, which is actually part of the Bill of Rights, was ratified in 1791, and it basically states that the Constitution's principle of federalism, by providing the powers not granted to the federal government nor prohibited to the states by the Constitution of the United States, are reserved to the states or to the people.
Right. That's it. The meaning, James Madison, for example, who by many is called the father of our Constitution, he drafted good parts of it, would not actually support the full implementation of the Constitution until the 10th Amendment was ratified. It was the most important part of the entire Bill of Rights to him. And what it means is, over the years, people have tried to characterize it as an amendment that says, well, the states have some rights and the people have some rights. No, that's not what it was. When the people went to the Constitutional Convention, they did not intend to form a huge, powerful national government. They needed a federal government to do two things mainly. One was to be able to collect and support a defense mechanism for the whole country, meaning defense, the armies, the navy. They also, the second part was interstate commerce. When they met, people in Maine could not ship to Georgia without going through seven states of different currencies and different regulations as to commerce. So the two reasons why they came together and established the Constitution were to provide for a common defense and to allow only Congress to control interstate commerce. The 10th Amendment, the purpose of it, the intent of it, the language of it says that what we haven't given to Congress and what we haven't prohibited the states from doing is still with the states and the people, mm-hmm. as it was before we wrote the Constitution. And viewed from that standpoint, the 10th Amendment is the most powerful amendment that we have to protect us at the local level. And what it means when it says reserved to the states and to the people, to me, what that meant was, and I've read all of the journals of the Constitutional Convention. I had to. I was forced to in college, and I thought at the time it was in cruel and inhuman punishment.
Yeah, rumor has it they're doing that in Congress now.
yeah, they actually have read it for the first time. The Tenth Amendment, to me, what the people means in that is local government, to the states and to the people who are represented by local government.
Yeah, we're set up to be represented by somebody so that when there's an issue, we can go to them. I think that what I've learned over the last couple of years working with the Tea Party system and coming from a non-political background is that most people have become disenchanted with the concept of politics. They think everyone who runs for office is dishonest and all that kind of stuff. There's become a popular movement to basically trash politicians. And so anything that looks like it's going to take away their power has been very popular. The problem is, by doing that, you shoot yourself in the foot when you need them to represent you.
Because they
you can't have both.
Yeah.
That's right, and the local representation is more responsive to the people, because it doesn't take nearly as many votes to change a county supervisor as it does to change a member of Congress
or the president, which is what people focus on all the time.
Or the president. So the 10th Amendment, and that's the reason that I decided to begin a series of conferences on the 10th Amendment, to really stress the importance of it. And how coordination is just a tool of the 10th Amendment, one of many. There are many ways that local government can express itself, and that's going to be the focus of my conference in Salt Lake at the end of this month. And I hope it's the beginning of a series of conferences on the 10th Amendment, so that people who are really interested in limiting the authority of the federal government and even the state governments. Understand that that's the amendment that gives the authority to supervisors like Les, who are interested in their constituents and in their private property rights, the authority to do something about it.
You know, and speaking of Les and the local level, Les, you're involved in the RTPA, and
yes.
That is basically the Agenda 21 concept on a very local level. Can you kind of give the folks out there some information on that, what it entails, and kind of spell out the acronym?
Regional Transportation Planning Authority. We, or agency, we is mandated through SB 375 to take a look at emissions challenges, pollution, the global warming thing, the whole process. They began a process that innocently was a blueprint process, and it was presented for informational purposes, quote unquote, only, and that was several years ago. And when I first was elected, sat on the board, and I questioned that process, and I said, "Well, this sounds strange. Why are we spending all this money to develop this information?" And I was told the outcome would simply be to advise local governments. Well, fast forward years later, we're presenting with information. It now becomes a Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger mandated element of our state of California, and this is the kicker. And Fred Kelly Brandt brought this out, that there are cookie cutter assemblies and units meant to establish planning throughout the United States. And I've told people this, and they say, "Well, that's not possible." Well, here's a true story. 6 months in advance of the local brochure being printed for people to vote on which type of a local planning process they would like, whether they'd like to have a rural process, leave it alone, whether they'd like to have something established in the corridors or in the cities themselves in terms of where they live and how they shop and how they go to work. I went online and brought up 10 more identical processes, and I predicted 6 months in advance of the brochure even being printed, what it would look like. And I did it publicly, and I predicted by percentage the outcome within a variable of about 1% or 2%. The local newspaper picked up on it and said, called me a mind reader. Well, it wasn't. I looked at every other blueprint process. Ours was identical. The scenarios were
identical. Were these in California?
Yes. Yeah. The scenarios were identical, and the outcomes were all identical.
So really, it's a big picture plan.
Predetermined. And I got shot down a little bit because I dared to say, that people in Shasta County want to live, and I represent the county, remember. I'm not representing
right.
the city of Redding.
Right.
But people of Shasta County in the urban areas want to live a rural and comfortable lifestyle.
That's why they're here.
On their little plot of a paradise.
Mm-hmm.
And I find
mm-hmm.
nothing wrong with that. And yet this mandate would push people off of their lands into the cities. That's the goal.
Yeah.
And I understand the goal. But we still have freedom in the United States of America to live where we choose, and
well,
a lot of people out there have
yeah.
some property they'd like to live yeah. on and feel comfortable doing that.
Absolutely.
I'd like to see that. So I question the whole process. I'm a pretty lonely voice out there.
Mm-hmm.
I know you have attended some meetings.
I have.
And you hear me asking questions. Well, I'm one of seven, and I'm the only person really saying, no, this isn't really quite right.
So if somebody wanted to know about RTPA, where the meetings are, they want to get information on it, how can they get in contact with you?
Directly with me on the county webpage at lbaugh, that's the first initial of my first name, Les, lbaugh, at co.shasta.ca.us. I'd be happy to send you a meeting schedule for RTPA in any other agency or board that I happen to sit on.
And I know you're pretty generous with your phone number.
I am. Two different ways of getting a hold with me. You can call me directly at the county at 225-5557, or my cell is 941-4748.
Okay. I've been to those meetings, and actually, folks, if you're listening and you do have a nice little plot of paradise that you're living on, I highly recommend you look into this.
Absolutely. And, you know, we want to make sure that this is a resource-rich program for people to be able to get back to you with specific questions, all our different people. So Les has his information out there. Mr. Grant, you're with the American Stewards of Liberty.
I am. I have, but I have a direct email address and telephone numbers that really speeds up the process if people want information.
Why don't you fire that out, and we will also post that online.
That's fine. My email is, if you can remember my name, it's easy, fredkellygrant@live.com.
Simple.
And Kelly is K-E-L-L-Y. My grandfather spelled it that way. He was an alcoholic. Now that I understand what alcohol is, he was a very successful practicing alcoholic. My grandmother was the originator of the Christian Temperance Union in South Carolina, so she spelled it K-E-L-L-E-Y, but I inherited my grandfather's spelling.
So. Okay. So,
and the phone number is 208-249, I always have to think about it because I don't call it, 6838. That's my cell number. The office number is 208-466-1545.
Cool. We will post that online with this program so that people have a way to get back to you, and if they're looking for resources within their county on how to help their elected officials, what would be by way of giving people resources? Let's say they have, because I've talked to people who are working in local government, and when you say, you know, smart growth isn't really as smart as you think. What are your thoughts on strategic planning and those things? And you know that these people are conservative. They really don't want everybody's rights to go away.
Right.
But they think these things, they bring money.
Yes.
You know, in California, you have the Strategic Growth Council that's handing out big fat grants.
Right.
You know, a $400,000 grant Shasta County applied for. So they think it brings money and resources into their county, and so it's a good partnership. How do you help them see the other side?
Well, by example, such as Les gave, he's exactly right. He didn't have to predict what was going to come; he could see it. And if he had gone on the internet for Wisconsin, for example, he would have found the same kind of thing going on there. That's what I say about these lakeshore regulations. In Monterey County, years ago, maybe 10, 11, 12 years ago, the county supervisors were faced with a general plan that had been prepared for their planning department. And it had been done with the help of the Sonoran Institute from, I think, Arizona, Southern California. And it was completely paid for by the Sonoran Institute. So they had invested nearly $1 million in developing this general plan for Monterey County. A group of farmers and farm organizations in the southern part of the county asked me to come and take a look at the plan and help them. One of their people had been to one of my conferences on the 10th Amendment, which I'm now resuming. And I went down and looked at it, and I met with the supervisor from the southern part of the county, which is all agricultural. And I said, look at this language here. Why would you want this language in? And what the language was, that there would be no development along any stream of water. And he said, well, we don't want houses built along streams. And I said, a stream of water means a ditch, right? An irrigation ditch, yeah. I said, look at the definition of development. and it included moving dirt with a shovel, which would mean that no farmer, no farm worker could work on an irrigation ditch throughout that southern part of the county. And he said, we don't want that in there. And I said, well, you're about to vote that in there. I said, why did you do this? And he said, well, I haven't read the whole thing. Our planners
told me there's a lot of that going around. Collective
sigh.
That
if we did this, the feds would leave us alone. I said, of course they'll leave you alone. Because what they've done is write something that even the federal government can't enforce. So, you know, these things, what you have to do sometimes is just get down to the specifics and show people what it is that these things do, just like Les did in looking ahead at what was going to happen. And sometimes that's the only way to do it. Sometimes in general you talk about these things and people think, well, that can't happen here.
Exactly. You hear that a lot.
Exactly.
I think that's a little bit of denial going on.
No, but it's also like, you know, that's what happens with like all the Agenda 21 and the ICLEI stuff and all that. You know, people think, well, geez, you know, these people—these are the same people that are sending rebate checks to dead people through the Social Security Administration. Mm-hmm. I mean, how could they possibly pull this off?
Or tax refunds to prisoners that have been
exactly.
in prison for 15 years
exactly.
and haven't made any money.
Exactly.
You know, it is, with some of the folks, it's denial. With the people who support these agendas, it's denial. In order to persuade other people in the community that it isn't really so. But with a lot of people, it is that this isn't the nation we grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
My dad would have refused to believe that all these things could happen in America. I'm sure that that most of your folks could not believe that these things would happen, but they are happening. And so consequently, people who would like to live their lives, make their livings, enjoy their time off, not go to all these meetings and so on, they just don't believe that it can happen.
And you know, and it's such a huge, huge issue with so many facets to it, and actually so many tentacles, that we do have to serve it to people in bite-sized pieces.
The other thing is, too, they think they can't do anything about it.
Exactly.
Two phases, you know, it may not affect me. And what the heck am I going to do about it?
That's exactly right. My oldest son's favorite line to me, can I do anything about it, Dad?
And can I, as a citizen,
do anything about it?
Exactly.
And that's the great thing about coordination and supervisors like Les and his supervisors there. There is something people can do about it if they do it at the local level.
And, you know,
everything that happens in Washington, D.C. has to be implemented at the local level.
And we talk a little bit about building coalitions, which is
sure.
also extremely important. And I think when we come back from our break, I'd like to talk to Sylvia Milligan, who has spent the last 10 years building a coalition of people that come from different groups and agencies with different likes and desires and issues. But ultimately, it's all the same. And
right.
we want to talk to her about that when we return.
Exactly. And back to what you had started with, Fred, that the Tea Party was, people can't come to that still for a variety of reasons.
Absolutely.
But under that really big tent, people can find a voice together on the issues
exactly.
that they're passionate about. And I find that it's a tremendous clearinghouse for information. You know, like I said, the cattlemen's guys yesterday, I was like, hey, they were talking about, well, we're just 1% of the population. You know, we've got to reach out. And I'm like, do you realize that there are tons of people who live in cities who really aren't super clear on where meat comes from?
That's right.
But they would support you because these violations of private property and this overreach of the government absolutely unites your causes, although your experiences and your lifestyles are wildly different.
That's exactly right.
That's what'll cause it to continue as well. That's why we don't focus on myopic social issues.
Mm-hmm.
Too divisive, nothing gets done, and we wind
that's
up
right.
like everything else. Let's splinter off into 9,000 groups and, you know, become social clubs.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely,
and that's what's so important about the whole movement. It really is.
We're going to take a tiny break. It'll be our last one, and then we'll run all the way till 10 o'clock. We'll get in the information on how people can get a hold of the folks on the program if you haven't figured that out already. And please go to readingteaparty.com. look at the blue bar, click on radio show. You'll see all the bios of the people that are on the program. You will find those phone numbers and all that updated, and that show will archive after, I don't know, noon or so today, so you could send anybody there to listen to that program again later, which is awesome. Thank you, KCNR, for that that little bonus there. You are listening to KCNR 1460.
Hey, if you could see us right now, you'd think we wanted to be on TV. You think we're sitting in a stuffy studio,
dancing with the stars?
Yeah, but we're all moving from there. We're all swaying and gyrating from the waist up in here.
Gyrating, not a good word. Bad visual. Sorry, everybody.
Swaying. Anyway, welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. We're at KCNR 1460. If you want to give us a call before our half an hour is up and the show ends for today, give us a call at 605-4567. Do try a little early, though, so we can get you in. If you want to stream live or chat with us, go to readingteaparty.com. Click on the blue radio show icon, and that'll take you to the media page, and you can join us. And, you know, we're speaking with Fred Kelly Grant, Les Baugh, and Sylvia Milligan this morning, and we're talking about county and federal government coordination. And you know, you can archive those shows and tune in whenever you want.
Absolutely. And this is all for the benefit of We the People finding a voice, because Mr. Fred Kelly Grant found a clause called coordination, has really helped people around the country turn that into a process that gives us back a little bit of power when we're dealing with some of these giant bureaucracies that would seek to, we'll just say, control us. How's that? And take our ground. So, Sylvia, talk to us about the Friends of Shasta Trinity National Forest and how you guys are helping pull people together.
Friends of the Shasta Trinity National Forest came about when we could not resolve the problems that we were having with the forest and working with them to hear us. So we've started this coalition, and anybody that wants to get involved can go to forest@readingteaparty.com and let me know, and we will get you on the list.
Now, Sylvia, what groups are in this coalition?
Oh, any recreational organization, any person, anybody out there that is concerned about what is happening to property rights, their access to the forest, any recreational issue, if they're just interested in recreation.
What type of groups do you have involved in the coalition now?
We have, there's the Reading Dirt Riders, the local groups, the Shasta Rock Rollers, the, I'm trying to think of the name of all of these clubs, the Volcano Rider Snowmobile Club, the Reading Snow Riders, the Black Sheep Four-Wheel Drive Club. We have contacts from Southern California, from Inyo County. They've heard about the work that they've done, and they've contacted me and said, we want to be on your email list. We want to know what's happening, because they know that we pretty much are up on what is going on.
So really, a Boy Scout troop could join because they like to camp in the woods, and horse riders could join because they like to ride their horses on the trails. Camping, fishing, hunting. I mean, if you like to step foot in the forest, period.
Oh, yes.
You want to be a part of this coalition.
That's true. And we have some people that are in a handicap group that are having problems with access in the forest. They've contacted us. We have hunters, fishermen, you name it. If you like to go outside and you're concerned about your rights, get on our email list, and we'll keep you informed as to what's going on.
And I think this is the point we've been trying to make all along, is that in the big picture, this massive land grab by the federal government is going to affect everyone. And it doesn't matter how you vote. It doesn't matter what club you belong to. It doesn't matter what your extracurricular activities may be. It will affect everyone. And the way to stop it is to bring everyone together for a common cause.
Correct. And people think when they hear the acronym OHV that that means quads and dirt bikes. It doesn't. It means any vehicle that goes off of a paved road is now an off-highway vehicle.
A Lincoln, a Camry, a Toyota.
Motorhome.
A hybrid.
Anything, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you're driving through the forest and you'd like to, say, get out and just walk down and look at something.
You're now an OHV.
Correct. And you have to make sure you do not park more than one car length off of the road.
So make sure you can measure.
And people are really good at parking anyway. I mean, I think we could all agree on that, that, you know, parking skills in general in our society are excellent. So I'm sure people are really following that, and that's just one more restriction that they've got to be loving right now.
Yes, and when you get the equestrians out there, or even the people with their toy haulers, and you get more than one or two couples that want to go out at a time, there's no place to park. Parking is just not available because you have to park one car length off the road. And how many spots when you go out into the forest do you see that will accommodate more than one vehicle?
Right. And so let's, you know, I'm always thinking like, okay, the reason we lose these issues is because 80% of the people out there don't relate, you know, a lot of times. They don't relate specifically. So if they're thinking, well, I don't really use the forest, and I think it's sad that the roads are being closed, but that's not really my thing. And so, out of sight, out of mind, go on down the road. The thing I do think we have to help people understand is that if, in fact, they are interested in focusing on limited government, this is a piece of limited government. This is also a piece of fiscal responsibility because all these people are being paid to manage land that, oh yeah, it's not on the tax rolls anymore. Les, how'd you like to have those property taxes in the county budget?
Wouldn't that be great?
Wouldn't that be sweet? So, okay, they're off the property tax rolls, but our taxes go to pay people to maintain these areas, and then when they catch on fire because they've allowed them to turn into a giant matchstick, we've got to pay all those costs, and we all know how inexpensive it is to fight fire. So you have all this cost. So even if you don't use the forest, I got a newsflash for you.
You're costing you.
You're way, way overpaying for your lack of use.
So basically, you are going to pay the federal government to keep you on your keep you off your own land.
And not just on principle. You know what I mean? You should push back just on principle for that.
Yeah.
So getting involved in issues like this is really part of a bigger picture. Sometimes politics is very disinteresting and disaffecting for people. They think it's all about partisanship, and they don't like all that, and they don't understand the rules, perhaps. I'll tell you, one of the biggest things you could help folks do is understand who represents them. Understand that they have, that they do have county supervisors, and what piece of the county are they in, and who represents them. City council, what do they do? The fact that most people don't know that they have senators that represent them at the state level and at the federal level. I didn't know any of this. Eighth grade was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Most people don't do government after eighth grade.
Can I add a couple of thoughts to bring it down to a practical basis for the average person in Shasta County, even if you're not a recreational user of the forest? Supervisor Glenn Hawes always brings this up at every meeting, and I love him for this. If we shut down those smaller access roads, those ML3 and ML2 roads, how do we access the forest for fire suppression?
Absolutely.
Okay, exactly. We all want to keep the fire healthy or out. We don't want the place to burn down and come right into the cities and burn us down. We almost had that problem on the west side of town here 2 years ago.
Yeah,
and we were challenged on even being in the Whiskey Town area. We had to go to our congressman to get in there to put out the fire.
And the interesting thing is that, you know, part of the reasoning behind this is to keep the forest healthy. Keep, you know, if you keep humans out of it, then you protect the wildlife and the ecosystems and all the species that reside there. You think a fire won't wipe them out?
And application number two for the average person, when logging was shut down on our federal forests, we were promised that recreation dollars would take the place of those logging, those timber receipts. And those recreation dollars would generate funds that would go to our school system. Okay,
mm-hmm.
If you can't have logging, you can't have processing, you can't have recreation dollars, our local school systems will continue to go down. Every parent here is affected by decisions made in our local forest.
Yeah, timber receipts funded schools.
Yeah, absolutely.
See, this is the kind of thing that people are listening to programs like this are starting, they either get it, and they know these issues, and they're just getting more information. Or they're thinking, hey, what the heck's going on out there? And they're just getting started. Bottom line is, every single person that gets any of this info needs to mention it to someone else. You don't
Absolutely.
Have to be an expert. There are tons of people who will get you the information you need. But we need awareness. Bottom line is, we need awareness. We need something to help people
And that's why this network of email addresses is so important to build this coalition. We need a way to get information out to people immediately so they can act upon these things that are going on out there that are going to harm them.
Exactly. The Reading Tea Party website, that's why it's a social network. Mm-hmm. People can get on there and post things, videos, pictures, discussions, and find out information and share information. You know, the biggest, again, back to yesterday where I spent time with people who really just wanted to go, you know, work on their land and be left alone. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest things I heard from people was that they don't know who to talk to. One man said, well, I got this scary letter from the government about this permit, and it made it sound like I wasn't going to be able to irrigate anymore, and I haven't irrigated for 2 years, and now I'm going to do it again, and I'm afraid they're going to come after me. People are actually out there afraid, and they think they're all by themselves.
That's right.
That's not okay. So, okay, Fred, jump in here and bring us some words of wisdom.
I was going to add one thing to what Les said. Think also about medical response. If someone is in the forest and they've gone in hiking, you aren't going to prevent people from hiking into the woods. And someone has an accident and needs medical support, who's responsible for that? The county is. And how do they get there? How do they get there to respond? That's another thing along with the fire. And then also to add to what Les said and right along the same thing, who takes care of the wildlife? The Forest Service doesn't. The Bureau of Land Management doesn't. What would happen to the wildlife in our forests and on the grazing lands if human beings are kept away? It's something that the anti-loggers, the anti-recreation people don't want you to think about. But wildlife depends on human beings. Anecdotal history, written history shows that the sage grouse and other species that are now threatened with endangerment under the Endangered Species Act were far more plentiful in days when there was more grazing. Wildlife in the forest were far more plentiful when human beings had more access to the forest. So our opponents rely on myths that we have to dispel, and people like Les and Sylvia are helping dispel them. The work they're doing at the local level, the work that you folks at the various Tea Party organizations that I visited in the Reading area, is so critical to spreading the word to others, as you say, to let them know that even if they never go into the forest, they are impacted economically and socially by what happens there.
Absolutely. I had a guy yesterday, he said, you know, my family has been ranching on the same ground for 150 years. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, if we were destroying wildlife, specifically fish, if we were destroying fish on our property, he goes, they'd all be dead by now.
Well, you look at the newest secretarial order that came out just before Christmas that ordered the BLM to inventory every piece of public grazing lands now for the purpose of determining whether it should be characterized as wildlands. Why would anybody be interested in preserving something if ranchers had ruined it?
Exactly.
If miners had ruined it, if loggers had ruined it, if recreation people had ruined it. It just doesn't make any sense when you really think about it and apply common sense to it.
Along with that comment about fish, we have Craig Chenoweth on the phone with us from Siskiyou County.
Good morning, Craig.
Talk to us about the water users group up there, and I'm sure you've got a couple questions for Mr. Grant.
Good morning, Fred. Good morning, Sylvia. Good morning to all of you. Actually, I'm coming into the conversation a little late. I've been out feeding my cows.
And destroying the environment, I'm sure.
Oh, it's a little frosty up here to do anything else.
Shame on you.
Forgive me for coming in late. I haven't heard the whole conversation, but just on what you were talking about, Fred, is that the farmers and ranchers have always been the best stewards. And we understand the land a lot better than any other government agency who thinks they can learn it out of a textbook. And like you were saying, Aaron, the farmers and ranchers have to be good stewards in order for their land to survive. It's a really important part of our philosophy is grazing and being able to work the land so it continually produces fish and wildlife, so you have a balanced ecosystem that'll keep it sustainable. I hate that word these days.
Oh, I know.
I like
it's
to say
into
profitable.
A, yeah.
Yes. For the long run.
And talk to folks about your group up there, Craig, because you're at the forefront of the water battle in Siskiyou County.
I'm president of the Scott Valley Protect Our Water Group. We're an ad hoc group that is fighting basically the Department of Fish and Game, the state of California, and some of the people even here in Siskiyou County about being able to have the right to work the land the way we see fit. We've come under a great deal of pressure and fire now from the Department of Fish and Game to be required to get permits to work our own land. And this has to do with water. And like you were saying, Fred, it's all about educating folks and getting the message out there. And that's what we've been able to do over the last 9 months. We've made some great leaps and bounds in terms of informing people exactly the intent of these government agencies to circumvent the Constitution, the Congress of the United States, and to act with no authority whatsoever to bully and pressure people into signing up for programs that will tie them up in bondage, put them out of business, and not really be very good at all for the environment.
We wouldn't be talking about those infamous 1,600 permits, would we?
We certainly would. That's one aspect of it.
What, the $10,000 permit?
Well, we don't really know exactly where the price is going to begin and where it's going to end. The contracts are so vague and open-ended that the Department of Fish and Game, who wants us to sign up for the 1,600 permit and for the incidental take permit, the ITP, they're telling us that, well, we're just going to make it up as we go along. That is what their intent is, so you have no idea whether or not it could be $10,000 this year, $35,000 next year, or how many permits you might need. Will it actually be one blanket permit for your ranch, or will it be 30 permits for your ranch? They'll figure that out by how much they need to make to pay their employees and have a pension fund and to survive and send their kids to school, where they'll run us out of business.
And that's a really good point, Craig, because basically the reason that these, and this is a bureaucracy that Aaron was talking about, and why we have to keep, we have to stop pointing fingers at our elected officials, because this is an example of the bureaucracy that has to self-fund. And they do that by fining and feeing people.
Our public official or elected officials can help us with this if we'll support them.
Yeah.
But we've become such excellent critics, we've almost criticized ourselves into, a corner, really. We're backed into a corner.
Society today has become codependent on their government for too many things.
Yeah.
And this is where the financial problem is. This is why California, as a rule, is going bankrupt. One of the things that we have to do and that is going to be most important for us up here in Siskiyou County is to take back control of the county. What I mean by that is basically having representatives and politicians who will back us on our constitutional rights of water and property and any other right that may be trampled on. That's first and foremost. The bureaucracy, as you've said, is overwhelming. It's too big. It needs to be cut off at the neck. Not at the knees, but at the neck, and really to be able to start over. The term bankruptcy is a great word, because what that means is restructuring, reorganization, so you could reopen the doors. And one of the problems up here in Siskiyou County, with all the availability of natural resources that we have, we are being told by folks outside of the county, by the state and the federal government, that we can't utilize these things to stay profitable. We have to pay the government to spend more money to be codependent on them, and this is really where most people are looking at the government for a handout.
Craig, I wanted to just jump in here and tell you something about your local Board of Supervisors. I sit on Shasta County's board, and just 2 weeks ago at the Regional Council of Rural Counties meeting in Sacramento, Michael Kobseff on your board and Jim Cook on your board brought this very issue to the attention of the 30 regional councils from RCRC, and RCRC is beginning to take up this issue as well. They've requested help at the state level through our analysts and those who approach our state and federal agencies. Your two supervisors did a great job of bringing us on board. I know that I really appreciated that. So you have been able to reach out, and you're talking about educating people. I think you're actually making some headway here.
Thank you very much. I hope so. You know, we're trying to get out and talk to many people. And I'll tell you something, it has been a long, hard road in terms of just educating our own politicians up here. I think that basically, you know, we have the ability and we have the people to actually take back control of this county. One of the other concepts of this idea is not to shut out everybody, but to get a fair and level playing field. This has become one of the most important issues, especially in water up here, that has not ever been looked at. We have government agencies who are coming in and telling us what to do, how to do it. The process of coordination, of which Fred and Sylvia are so involved in under these with other government agencies, is so important. Because like here in Scott Valley, one of the things that's never, ever looked at is where the water comes from, which are upland tributaries that run into the Scott River. Well, I'm sorry, Craig, that's not in our perspectives here. That's out of the scope of our study. We're just going to focus on the river. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of one of those guys who likes to look at the top of where the water comes from and how it comes on down. But that's what I mean about taking back control to where if a government agency, state or federal, or even another county wants to come in and tell us what they think they should do, they're going to have to play by our rules, which are the rules set out through coordination, which would allow us to have a fair and level playing field to where the entire problem is looked at. Does that make any sense to you?
It does.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Fred, we're coming into the home stretch here. What thoughts do you have for us?
Well, I think that the work that Craig's doing, the work that Les and his supervisors are doing, and that Sylvie's doing is very important. And the work that you two ladies are doing in putting this show out, the work that your tea parties are doing, that all has to be continued, and it has to be upgraded to the point where we continue to expand the group of people who are listening to you and who are learning. And the more local governments that we can get involved in the government-to-government relationship between the federal and state agencies and local government, the better off we're going to be in bringing some sanity back to what's going on in government control.
If you were going to help somebody who was listening to this and thought, well, these are just a bunch of bitter country people, you know. on that note, there are a lot of people who live in the city because that's where they work, and they own property up here.
Absolutely.
In these areas, and they're actually being affected, although they don't technically live there now. So, I don't mean to bash.
No, they absolutely are being affected. People in the cities are affected every day by the economy.
Exactly.
If nothing else, by the economic impact of what is happening on the public lands. What they don't understand sometimes is that the people that have their eyes on our public land as collateral are not after the land. They're after the water. They're after the minerals under that land, and they're after the timber on that land. And all of those economic impacts are going to be felt by everybody in the cities if our federal government gets to the point that they're using all of those things as collateral for the $1 trillion loan that we have or that we are indebted to China.
Absolutely. For people who are listening to this and kind of going, geez, you know, this is a little over my head, in the sense that they're not necessarily sure if they believe this this broad brush picture that we've painted here, where would you suggest they begin verifying?
I think that, for example, the website that we now have up, waronruralamerica.com, the American Stewards of Liberty .us has tremendous amounts of information. Well, if they want to go on Google, just go on Google and enter Agenda 21 or enter Smart Growth.
Any of those things, yeah.
And you'll find, things that, or climate control. You'll find things that support everything we've said on this program. The information out there is just voluminous, and it can be reached through Google if they don't want to go to one of our websites.
Absolutely.
And as you look at all these things, that's the thing that gets me, is when you dig down into, and you don't have to go very far.
Yeah.
This is a Clean Water Act. It's going to do this and that. And then you just, the sentence that didn't make it into the description, which I'm sure was just an accident, always includes the phrase, you know, climate change or global warming or something, and I'm like, you know, how long do we need to work with that?
As Les said, that's one of the prime focuses now, is climate control, and that was one of the things that is used by the Secretary of Interior in several secretarial orders that have been issued just in the last month or 6 weeks.
Now, Les and Sylvia, on a local level, what would you encourage people to do?
Well, what I see is that it has taken years and years and years for us to get in this situation, and it's been an insidious thing. It's just been slowly with different bills and different laws and whatever. And people are going to have to get educated. And I would suggest, you know, that if you're concerned, if you really are interested in this and want to know more about it, you can also come Monday nights to the Reading Tea Party.
Thank you. I was going to say that.
There's other tea parties in town, whichever one you feel comfortable in going to, or you can email me at forest@readingteaparty.com. Something else I want to say, too, is that Fred Kelly Grant has spent a tremendous amount of money coming out here. He stays at my home. I've paid for his plane tickets to bring him out here. But it costs a tremendous amount of money to just for the expenses. Mm-hmm. And anybody that feels like they would like to help out here can get a hold of me at forest@readingteaparty.com, or you can go on roc4u.org, and through PayPal can make a contribution. I also want to say in Fred's behalf, he wrote a book called Justice My Ass.
Yeah.
Oh, Fred, you're so politically correct.
Oh, yes.
Just like us. Go online, get the book. It's a fun read.
And Les, don't you agree that if folks just don't have the wherewithal to dive into this huge piece of information, that maybe they could start by getting to know their local elected officials, perhaps attending a Board of Supervisors meeting?
You know, I would love to have more people attending the meetings. We have an open time process. People can come and speak their mind on items that aren't even on the agenda, but are related to county business. We, on behalf of the Board of Supervisors, I can tell you, we welcome the public input. And I want to jump on Sylvia's bandwagon and the Tea Party bandwagon here, too. Join together. Come, we the people. It's a clause that starts it, and it also ends
it here.
Join it together. We have seen where folks coming together in groups can speak up and stand up against the federal government. With your help, your encouragement, and frankly, your finances, Sylvia's asking for some money there.
Mm-hmm.
Go online and find out how you can support it. Bring people like Fred Kelly Grant into the picture. We see our encouragement as coming through the people. And you can do that by joining together and supporting what your government is doing that's right. And we are doing this one right.
Exactly. No one person is going to find, you know, the perfect answer. It's going to come through numbers. And it's going to come through
super
public
important.
Pressure. And public pressure,
we need your help.
Is numbers.
Yeah. Bottom line, we need your help.
And again, please do come to the Reading Tea Party meetings. We meet every Monday night without fail, so you can plug in whenever you want. You don't have to remember which Monday night of the month. It's every Monday night at South Bonneville Baptist Church.
And for those of you that are not in the Reading area listening to this online, go to readingteaparty.com. You can click on locations. You'll find other places around Northern California, and you'll also find links to find folks around the country. There are groups happening all over the place.
One other comment that I'd like to make is that to have Fred work with us, we need to generate a lot of money because it's not cheap. But we have this incredible resource.
Exactly.
That
absolutely.
We can use
and
if we can raise the money.
Special thank you to you, Mr. Grant.
Thank you, Fred. Well, I'll tell you what, it's allowed me to finish my career working with good people.
And we feel the same.
Know, a lot of my career was worked was in the criminal field, and this is really, it's been a great way for me to finish up.
Thank you. We're coming
and
up
I don't
on
mean that I'm going to finish up real
10
quickly.
Seconds.
I'm 74 and I expect to.
Ooh! Sorry, Fred.
After the shooting rampage that left six people dead, Arizona Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords clings to life at University Medical Center in Tucson, where Fox News Radio's Rich Johnson is live with an update.
Well, Giffords is the only victim still in critical condition, but her surgeon, Dr. Michael Lamole, says they caught a huge break because the bullet did not travel from one side of her brain to the other.
Congresswoman Giffords is able to communicate with us this morning through following of simple commands, and we're very encouraged by that.
Commands like show me two fingers or squeeze my hand. Giffords' eyes are kept shut, and she's on a ventilator, so she can't talk. But Lamole says she is still in a very precarious situation. Lisa.
Rich, among the dead, Arizona federal judge John Roll and 9-year-old Christina Taylor Green. Her mother spoke to Fox News.
I just can't even put it into words. There's nothing I can possibly...